The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
From Oprah Winfrey's spiritual advisor to a former Democratic candidate for president, Marianne Williamson has had a wide-ranging career, it's fair to say. What started off as a career as a prominent spiritual advisor to Hollywood stars, Marianne decided to switch it up completely in 2020. She was one of the many Democratic candidates running in 2020. She ran again in 2024. Now, while her bid for the White House was cut short, Marianne remains a vocal voice in the Democratic Party. She's with me now ahead of an appearance tonight at 7 o'clock in the Talbot Hotel in Stillorgan. If you want tickets for that, they're available from seminars.ie, or you can literally rock up and pay at the door at 6:30. Marianne, good morning and welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Tell me, first of all, about your sliding doors moment from spiritual advisor to politician.
Well, you know, this idea that there are separate lanes is itself, I think, a bit absurd. We're multidimensional people, all of us in our lives on any given day. We're talking about one subject and then about our lives. Sure. We're talking about our health. The next moment, we're talking about a relationship. The next moment, we're talking about politics. The next moment, we're talking about business. So this idea that there are these two such distinct categories, the truth of the matter is spirituality is just a path of the heart. So I had a 40-year career already talking about how psychological and emotional issues and doing the right thing and being an ethical person and forgiveness and mercy apply to our personal journey. I don't understand why that shouldn't also apply to our public policy. And what I saw happening in the United States was that our public policies were becoming so unjust. When you look at something like income inequality is a perfect example, there's a deep injustice there that causes human suffering. So my topic is human suffering, and whether it's a public policy that is causing that suffering or an individual circumstance. To me, it's all the same topic.
But when you look back at administrations, I mean, you've had the Democrats and you've had the Republicans swapping appropriately every 4 or 8 years. So the blame for that inequality has got to land at the desks of all the parties.
The Republicans started it and the Democrats did not stop it.
As simple as that.
Absolutely.
Because I've often talked in this program about how the aspiration of every working American used to be that their kids would be better off and better educated than they were.
Correct.
And that has been thwarted.
Absolutely. And it started with the trickle-down nonsense, trickle-down economics, the idea that if you give more money to the people at the top, they become the job creators. The truth, of course, is that they become the part of their business model is job elimination, demonization of unions and so forth, cutting taxes for the very, very rich. And of course, what Trump is doing now is the total epitome of that. But once again, the Democrats did not so much seek to stop this completely as to negotiate with it. And that was their problem.
And what is it about the Democrats that doesn't allow them to be more forceful in conducting that argument on behalf of the people who want them to represent them more forcefully?
Well, unfortunately, it started with Bill Clinton, who felt like we could play with the big boys, too. Remember about that time? That was when so much money was pouring into the system and the donor class, the idea that we had to somehow make sure that the donors were happy, big pharmaceutical companies, big chemical companies, big agriculture, big insurance companies, military-industrial complex, big oil, and so forth. So whereas traditionally the Democratic Party had been unequivocal advocates for the working people of the United States, what started with Clinton, who also did some good things, don't get me wrong, but he came up with this idea basically that we will try to help you, but we will not go so far that to go any further would challenge the big donors. And at a certain point, you have to have it both ways. You can't have it both ways.
So what you're looking for is a Democratic Party that espouses the views currently espoused by Bernie Sanders, for instance.
Yes.
That's what you're looking for.
Yes.
Now, we're a long way from that, aren't we? Because, I mean, even for any aspiring Democratic candidate, be it for a local political seat or a seat in the House of Representatives or ultimately a Senate seat, the amount of cash you've got to raise, the number of, if you like, parts of your soul you have to sell to get that cash, it's so enormous.
Yes, it is. But there was in 2024, and I can tell you this as having been a candidate myself, the bigger problem was not just money at all.
But it is a problem.
It is a problem. The fact that Washington, D.C. is now a system of legalized bribery. So the undue influence of money on our political system is definitely the cancer underlying all the cancers. But you're asking specifically about candidacies. So what happened in 2024 was there's what I call a political media industrial complex. For instance, what's happening right now, Jake Tapper at CNN and others saying that the problem was that Biden had not gotten out early enough and that that was the cover-up. That's not what happened. That's an untruth that he's saying. The real cover-up is that the people who are now saying that are trying to cover up their own complicity. So it should not have mattered.
You mean it is true, but the people who might be charged with helping that to happen are trying to make excuses for themselves.
Well, absolutely correct. Because it should not matter whether or not he got out. Back in the 1960s, Lyndon Johnson was an incumbent president, and two U.S. senators primaried him. You should still have a primary if somebody's running against him.
And they chickened out. They did not challenge Joe Biden.
They did not challenge. Well, it's more than that. They deplatformed, deamplified, and even smeared, character assassinated, anyone who had the audacity, in this case, it was me. They went along with the idea that we will not allow any other voices to be heard.
How did they smear you? What sort of things did they do?
Oh, what they do, I'll give you an example. I've written 16 books. All of a sudden, this time I became a self-help author. So what they would say is at the beginning, they would say something like, there is no opponent for Joe Biden. So we would say, wait a minute, I'm running. I'm an FEC registered candidate. They would then start to say, no credible opponent, as though they had the right to say who was credible. So what they were really trying to do is to make sure that the Democratic voters did not hear that there was someone saying universal health care, tuition-free college and tech school, that we needed certain big issues that would be necessary to be brought to the table in order to beat Donald Trump. They didn't want the Democratic voters to hear that they actually had another option.
But the people who, and I presume that you do believe some of the stuff in the Alex Thompson, Jake Tapper book about how incapable that Joe might have been. I mean, the line was, he was good for 4 to 6 hours a day. And then the rest of the time he had to nap or he fell asleep.
My point is it should not have mattered. The role of a political party is to facilitate democracy, not to engineer it or manipulate it. And also, I have to tell you this as well. I live in Washington, D.C. I don't even believe it that they don't know. All those people go to the same cocktail parties. So it's just the whole thing is a ruse in my mind. And they are perpetuating the same narrative with which they covered it up to begin with.
So you mean the people, but why would someone cover it up if they...
Because they honestly believe that they're the smart people in the room. They honestly believe, this is what their belief...
So they believe that an ailing Joe Biden could have run 4 years in the White House. Or Kamala Harris would have taken over.
They believe that their people could handle it. This is what they thought. They thought that Donald Trump was such a threat to democracy. And about that, they were correct. But they felt that he was such a threat to democracy that they were entitled to suppress democracy in the Democratic Party. They felt, this is the pseudo-intellectual, the arrogance of it, the entitlement of it. They felt that Donald Trump was such a threat that they had to take charge here to make sure that he would not win again. These are people who did not read the country. They did not understand what was going on in the country. These are people who stay in their elite circles and they would not even allow to be heard. They would not even allow to be platformed anyone who was not part of their club. Their idea of a qualified candidate is someone who is qualified to perpetuate the machine that they're already running.
When you say they, who are they?
They are people such as Jake Tapper, interestingly enough, the Ron Klains, the people who were around the president, but also the Democratic Party elite. And then at that time...
But I'm trying to figure out who is the leader of the Democratic Party at the moment. It's very hard to... I mean, Chuck Schumer, probably not
Schumer,
as quick as he used to be.
The smartest thing that could have happened is that the day after the election that Chuck Schumer had resigned. That's what should have happened. That would have been the appropriate message to the American people that we got the message. You know, he should have resigned his leadership position. So, yes, and at that time, there was a head of a DNC named Jamie Harrison who was willing to coordinate all of that. There's a new head of the DNC, Ken Martin, who is an ethical man, and will do everything possible to make sure that kind of thing does not happen again. He told me that personally.
Do you remember Henry Kissinger used to famously say, you know, the problem with Europe is, if I want to call Europe, who do I call? And now, of course, it's much clearer. You call Ursula von der Leyen. That's much clearer than it used to be. But today, if I want to call the head of the Democratic Party, who do I call?
That's not the problem. I mean, when we do not have – if you have a Democratic president, then you call the president.
Yeah.
The Democrats do not have the White House right now. We don't have the House and we don't have the Senate. So right now, there has to be a stronger Democratic National Committee. But that's got its own – its own problems.
But we know that U.S. politics is very personality driven. I mean, Trump is the classic example of that. I mean, he's almost a cult-like figure. So you really do need someone to say, that is the Democratic Party, someone who personifies that party.
Well, I actually do not totally share that view. There are some really fine Democrats who are out there fighting every day and doing some great jobs. Senator Chris Murphy is doing an incredible job. Mm-hmm. The judges are fighting back very heroically. Some of these people are fighting back really at the expense of their own guarantee of personal safety. So I don't buy into the Democrats don't have a voice. I think they do have a voice right now. The problem is not about personality. Is the problem is about principles. The Democrats have to return to their traditional principles of unequivocal advocacy for the working people. They must be talking about issues. They must be presenting to the American people a genuine alternative to what Trump is saying.
Do they get too diverted by the trans debate and the woke debate?
Absolutely,
and all of that?
Absolutely. Why are we talking so much about that as opposed to the fact that one in four Americans are living with medical debt? Over half of our bankruptcies are medical bankruptcies. Over a million people and their insulin. Over 60% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. Mm. This is the kind of thing the Democratic Party...
We're bemused here in Europe. When we hear Trump labeling the left and the hard left and so on, virtually every politician elected in America is to the right of our politicians here.
Well, I said that throughout my campaign, that everything I was talking about that was labeled so left would be considered a moderate position here in a European advanced democracy.
So how do you combat that when you're being basically characterized as commies? Communists. That's the kind of language of Trump.
Well, you're asking someone who knows who experienced what you just said. But the truth of the matter was, the reason the Republicans are able to call those things communists is because the Democrats try to avoid standing for what they avoid for. This is how the Republicans work. If a Republican says something to you and it offends you, they say it again. And if you say that's so offensive, they'll say it again. Democrats will say something. You'll say that offends me. And we'll go, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And scuttle back. We need to say universal health care and say it again and say it again.
The other thing about the American system today is the lack of backbone. Now, we see it with the president of Harvard. He has it. He has backbone.
Yes, he does.
At maybe great cost to his institution, but he has it. And there are one or two people who stand up and have it. But, I mean, corporate America doesn't appear to have any backbone at all.
No, it absolutely doesn't. But once again, I'd like to point out the judges who do have backbone. These judges are being threatened. And I think that there are a lot of congresspeople, Democratic congresspeople and senators who are displaying that backbone. Unfortunately, no Republicans are, but we are being told about some of these Republican, I think this is very important to remember, some of these Republican congressmen and senators, it used to be, oh, they're not standing up to Trump because they're afraid that if they do, Elon Musk will pay for someone to primary them. Today, we're being told by people such as Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski, being told that they are literally afraid. They are afraid for their personal safety. That's how far this has gone.
So how precarious is the American Republic?
We're in big trouble.
And what to do? I mean, if you suborn the courts...
We have to see it as a kind of a political guerrilla warfare at this point. They have so purred the institutions that we had thought we could count on to withstand this kind of an assault. They have purged agencies, they have purged roles they have threatened. At this point, each of us has to do what we can do, whether it's an online media post, whether it's running for office, whether it's attending a town hall, whether it's a protest. Everybody has to do what we can do. And I do believe the American people are waking up. If the problem we have is the 2026 elections. And I do have a lot of concern. I think any Democrat has a lot of concern about the ways that the Democrats, that the Republicans will try to
They will gerrymander, they will exclude people.
Well, we gerrymander too. They both parties do that. But we have many red states where there are MAGA secretaries of state and also all the voter suppression efforts.
You are not convinced that those elections will be free and fair?
No, I am not.
Finally, the Supreme Court, the last bulwark, perhaps, and you've got Alito and you've Thomas in there who have shown themselves to be Trumpers through and through. Do you think that the other conservative judges will, at the end of the day, defend the Constitution?
There's some hope about Amy Coney Barrett right now, because there's a viral video of the look on her face when she saw Trump at his last State of the Union type address. We don't know. We had that hope about Sandra Day O'Connor, and she ended up voting against Gore. So you just don't know. That's certainly the hope. But right now, there is no guarantee.
And there's no guarantee that their families are not going to be threatened as well.
That is correct.
Well, Marianne, thank you very much for joining us. More of this conversation will be continued at the Talbot Hotel in Stillorgan at 7 o'clock tonight. Tickets are €65, available from seminars.ie, or you can pay at the door, arriving at 6:30. Marianne, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.